On Sunday, October 22nd, the UT Symphony Orchestra will perform one of the great works in symphonic history, the Symphony No. 10 by Dmitri Shostakovich. This piece holds an important place in history, both musically and politically. And here to talk with me more about this epic work is conductor of the UT Symphony Orchestra, Jim Fellenbaum. Welcome, Maestro, and thanks for coming to talk about this important piece of music.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, to begin with, let's set the scene. Let's talk about the time surrounding this work's composition. When was it composed, and what was happening in Russia during that time?
Certainly. So in early 1953, Joseph Stalin died. He had been an oppressive dictator in the Soviet regime for many, many years. And when it comes to artists and musicians, there was a very suppressive society, which was not really conducive to creativity, or at least creativity in terms of the way people thought you should be creative. Mm-hmm. The government had a very big say in that. So Stalin died, and immediately after that, Shostakovich began to write this symphony. Now, what is debatable is when he really started writing some of this music, because there are some fragments back in the late 1940s and also around 1951. The genesis of some of these passages certainly came before 1953, but the fact that when Stalin died and he decided that he was going to write his 10th symphony, that's when the kernel of creativity started. And from there, he wrote very quickly. In fact, one of my favorite quotes of his is that when a piece is finished, the creative spark dies. So he started, he wrote and wrote and wrote, and it ended. And then later that year, that same year in 1953, it had its world premiere. So when Shostakovich really, truly began to write the full symphony, this reflects exactly how he felt during the entire Stalin years, how he felt at that moment when Stalin finally passed, and what the future might hold for him living in such an oppressive society for all those years. And the symphony really does reflect that.
Mm-hmm. He must have felt such a sense of freedom at that point, you know, because, I mean, Stalin actually banned Shostakovich's music, not once, but twice.
Exactly. Yes, there were two public condemnations mm-hmm. of Shostakovich. And each time that happened, he returned with a piece of music that resurrected himself. One of the most famous ones is when he was publicly condemned, and he returned the following year with his epic Fifth Symphony. Mm-hmm. And the quote that surrounds that symphony is, paraphrasing, it's basically a Soviet artist's response to the expectations of the government. That mm-hmm. was the feeling.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
and whether he truly meant that or not, he had to be very sly with his intentions and with his proclamations, because being in that era where if you said something relatively inflammatory, you could get in trouble, mm-hmm. maybe even more inflammatory, something bad might happen to you.
Yeah.
So that
mm-hmm.
there could be a lot happening with that. So yes, that freedom that you speak of, you can hear that in the music. And in fact, there's not a true program with this symphony. And Shostakovich says that right away. And he says it very cautiously, because even though Stalin has passed and there's a new era, he never knows if something like that's going to resurrect again.
Right.
And if
mm-hmm.
someone's going to tap him on his shoulder behind him and say, what did you just say?
Mm-hmm.
So always the cautious spokesperson. He never assigned an actual program to it, but when you listen to the first movement, it really sounds like he's reflecting. Think of this time. What was this like? Gosh, what could have been? And now this has happened. Stalin has passed. Maybe I might think this. Maybe I express that. You hear it musically throughout. And yes, by the time you get to the fourth movement, it's pure joy.
Mm-hmm,
there's a lot of dark and brooding music mm-hmm. in the whole symphony. But finally, there is exultation. There is joy. There's a smile in mm-hmm. the symphony mm-hmm. that comes in the last movement.
And I understand that the second movement has a specific significance to it.
Yes. Many people attribute that movement as a portrait of Stalin.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Shostakovich never said that in his life. Mm-hmm. At least he never said it publicly. However, there is a book called Testimony by Solomon Volkov, and he was a Russian musicologist. And in that book, and by the way, that book is widely disputed for its authenticity, but however, in the book, when he said he interviewed Shostakovich about the 10th Symphony, he said, yes, this was a portrait of Stalin. It was a portrait of Stalin and the Stalinist years. So whether it's true or not, whether that quote is valid, many people felt that anyway, and that particular quote helps to reaffirm what people thought. But the second movement is 4.5 minutes of the most devilish, whirlwind, heart-stopping, tour de force symphonic writing mm-hmm. that you'll ever hear.
Yeah.
when we've been rehearsing it with the UT Symphony, I can see a look on some of their faces as we're rehearsing when they're looking at the music and thinking, I have never played notes this fast before. I've seen like 20 notes go by and only 2 seconds have elapsed. it's a brutal whirlwind of a march. It's probably the most popular movement of the whole symphony. Wow, what a moment.
Yeah.
What a 4.5 minute moment it is.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing that's interesting musically about the symphony is the 10th Symphony is the first time that we find the DSCH motive. It's a cryptogram for Shostakovich's name. His last name, when spelled in Russian, is S-C-H-O, etc. So in the German musical language, you have the letter D. E-flat is represented by S. C is C. And the letter H represents the note B. So in this symphony, starting in the third and fourth movement, you hear D, E-flat, C, B, D, S, C, H.
Mm-hmm.
So this is his own personal motive where he's inserting his own name into his music,
mm-hmm.
and he uses it throughout the third movement, and it comes back in a very triumphant way at the end of the fourth movement. In fact, the brass at the end of the fourth movement blare out this great DSEH. It's kind of like he's saying, I've arrived,
mm-hmm.
I'm saying what
mm-hmm.
I want to say. And then the symphony ends with the timpani of all instruments hammering out DSEH, DSEH, like that. It's an incredible...
It's epic.
It is. Epic is the right word. So this was the first of many works where he inserted his own personal musical motive.
And so what was the audience's reaction to the 10th Symphony? Was it well received?
Yes, the symphony was very well received when it was first performed. Related to Shostakovich not saying precisely what he might have intended, which a lot of times he really did intend to write music that he felt deeply, not necessarily music that he was attributing to this event or this person or this act. But a lot of the hidden messages, a lot of the motives were not necessarily readily apparent to the audience, which was fine because they found it to just be simply a fantastic symphony and they enjoyed it. For example, in the third movement, there's a horn call that comes out right in the middle of the third movement. And it is also a cryptograph of Elmira, who was Shostakovich's perhaps girlfriend or not girlfriend at the
uh-huh.
time. She was a piano student. And obviously she was something to him at the time. And that was something else that the audience did not know. They just thought that it was just some kind of expressive call from the horn. And it in fact is a cryptograph of E-L-M-I-R-A
mm-hmm.
Right in the middle of the symphony. So that was something else the audience didn't know. But overall, the symphony was a success. And it's widely considered his greatest symphony ever.
Mm-hmm. And so why did you choose to program this symphony?
I've got to say that this UT Symphony Orchestra this semester, it is a very, very special group this year. It might be the best orchestra I've had since I've been here since 2003. We had a very successful first concert where we did Respighi's Fountains of Rome, and we're going to do his Pines of Rome in February, and a couple of other Italian pieces for an Italian program. And as we got close to the end of that concert cycle, I had not programmed this October concert yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always interested in knowing what pieces are of interest to the students, like mm-hmm. what they're really into at the moment and what pieces they might not like and things like that. So I just asked them one day, what do you want to play next concert? And I got a slew of answers back.
Yeah.
And I pondered it for a good 4 or 5 days before returning to the subject in another rehearsal and saying, look, I've heard you, and we've got Sibelius' Second Symphony, we've got Brahms' One, we've got Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, and we have Shostakovich 10 as the possible leaders to do. And so I asked them, I said, okay, who wants to play Sibelius 2? Who wants to play? I just had them raise their hands, and the most hands went up for Shostakovich 10. And
it's fantastic.
It is. They have been totally excited about this from day one. Well, not even from day one, from like a week before day one, while we're still finishing that Fountains program. And they have just taken to this work. It's been a real artistic challenge for them. It's artistic and it's technical, and it's something that's they've really risen to the occasion. It's been a real joy. And when I say joy, there have been times where we've gritted our teeth and looked at the page and said, I'm hating this right now. Yeah, I know. But then we get over those hurdles and we're like, ah, okay, now on to the next page. It's been a fantastic journey.
And so when did you begin rehearsing it?
We began rehearsing this piece on September 25th. So by the time we rehearse it, it will have been less than a month.
That's incredible.
Which includes fall break, so we missed a few days as well there. So yeah, again, they are just taking to it. Mm-hmm.
The students have put in many hours in the practice rooms for that, I'm sure.
Indeed.
Well, Meister Fellenbaum, it's been a pleasure talking to you about this monumental work. Thanks so much for coming in, and good luck with the performance.
My pleasure. Thank you again.
Once again, I've been speaking with Jim Fellenbaum, conductor of the UT Symphony Orchestra. They are performing the Symphony No. 10 by Dmitri Shostakovich on Sunday, October 22nd. The concert will begin at 4 p.m. and is in Cox Auditorium in the Alumni Memorial Building, located on the UT campus.